Opening narration.
Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome. Today we're diving into a book that really shook the literary world. James Frey's A Million Little Pieces, published back in 2003.
Mm-hmm. It's significant because it wasn't just a bestseller. It became this huge cultural flashpoint.
Right. It tells this incredibly raw story of addiction and recovery. But then it got engulfed in this massive controversy about truth in memoir.
Exactly. So listening today gives us a lens on addiction, recovery, personal philosophy, and crucially, the ethics of storytelling itself. It raised questions we're still grappling with.
The chronological journey.
Okay, so let's start with the man himself, James Frey. What were his formative years like before the chaos depicted in the book?
Well, the sources paint a picture of a fairly typical upper-middle-class suburban background. Think Cleveland, Michigan. Comfortable, seemingly stable on the surface.
But clearly, something wasn't connecting for him.
Apparently not. He talks about this deep sense of feeling disconnected, like an outsider, even within that comfortable life. And that feeling seems to be what spiraled.
Spiraled into substance abuse.
Yeah, pretty heavily. Alcohol, crack cocaine.
Yeah.
It became this outlet fueled by, as he describes it, a kind of rage. It led to years of, well, self-destruction.
So how does he get from that chaos to seeking help? What was the turning point?
It seems his parents were the lifeline. They were, you know, understandably helpless watching this unfold, but they didn't give up. There's this moment where they call him, track him down in a crack house, basically begging him to get help.
Wow, that must have hit hard.
It seems it did. That call becomes the catalyst. It's the tether that pulls him towards recovery, landing him in that Minnesota rehabilitation facility we read about at the start of the book.
Right, the place where the book really kicks off. And this is where his literary journey starts, too, in a way.
In a really paradoxical way, yes. His absolute lowest point, that horrific scene waking up on the airplane, bloody, broken teeth, no memory, that becomes the brutal, visceral opening of the book.
The catalyst for his breakthrough.
Exactly. The raw, stripped-down writing style he used to capture that hell was what got him noticed. It established him almost overnight as this major new voice in addiction literature. People hadn't read anything quite like it.
So his peak achievement, initially at least, was just getting this incredibly raw story out there and having it resonate so powerfully.
Absolutely. Its impact was huge. It topped bestseller lists, got picked for Oprah's book club. It felt like a genuine literary event. The legacy at that point was about the power of brutal honesty in depicting addiction. Of course, that legacy got complicated.
Core philosophy and values.
Okay, let's talk about the philosophy that underpins his recovery narrative in the book. It's often described as radical self-reliance. What does it actually mean in his context?
It's this interesting blend. Think existentialism meets a kind of fierce anti-authoritarianism. He fundamentally rejects the mainstream recovery paths.
Like the 12 steps.
Exactly. He's very explicit about that. The idea of admitting powerlessness, surrendering to a higher power, he sees that as an abdication of personal responsibility. Almost like weakness.
So for him, salvation or recovery couldn't come from outside.
No. He believed the only power capable of saving him resided entirely within himself. It had to be an act of sheer individual will, almost like a battle.
He has that internal monologue, right? That kind of creed.
Mm-hmm. I am an alcoholic, and I am a drug addict, and I am a criminal. Goes on.
I am a human being, and I am alive.
Yes, that part is key. It's his way of pushing back against labels, against being categorized by the system, or even by his own addictions. He's insisting on his own complex humanity despite everything.
So how did this philosophy shape his approach to the sheer difficulty of recovery, the pain involved?
He makes this really crucial distinction between pain and suffering. It's quite philosophical. Mm-hmm. Pain, for him, is just the physical sensation. It's unavoidable, biological. But suffering, that's the effect pain has on you. And he argues that suffering is, to some extent, a choice.
How so?
His core idea, summed up in a quote from the book, is, if one can endure pain, one can live without suffering. So recovery wasn't about avoiding pain. It was about enduring it without letting it break you, treating it like a war you had to win through sheer determination.
That definitely frames it as a very individual, almost heroic struggle.
Three pivotal turning points.
All right, let's look at some key moments in the narrative that really exemplify this philosophy, or maybe challenge it. The first one that jumps out is incredibly controversial.
Mm.
The dental work.
Ah, yes. The root canals without anesthesia. It's a very memorable scene.
In the book, he insists on it, right?
Yeah.
Refuses painkillers because he's in recovery and maybe sees it as a test.
Precisely. Within the narrative, it's presented as this ultimate act of self-mastery and maybe even atonement, proving to himself he can withstand excruciating physical pain to build mental strength. It's deeply symbolic.
Symbolizing his whole approach. Endure the pain, reject the suffering.
Exactly. It gives his character arc tremendous weight in that moment.
But we have to pause here because this is one of the key parts later revealed as fabricated, or at least heavily exaggerated.
That's right. And knowing that really changes how you read that scene and perhaps the philosophy it represents. The foundation feels shaky.
Okay, so moving past that controversial point, what's another turning point? He wasn't entirely alone in there, was he? There's Leonard,
Right,
right?
Leonard, the unconventional mentor figure. He's presented as this older, tough guy, supposedly with mafia connections.
And he's important because.
Because he offers James a different kind of support. Not clinical, not therapeutic, but this sort of streetwise tough love, unconditional loyalty. He validates James's anti-authoritarian streak.
So he reinforces the undersess against the system mentality.
In a way, yes, but he also provides genuine connection. Leonard's simple advice, just hold on, becomes his crucial anchor for James. He represents strength and honor found outside the official recovery structures.
So maybe not pure self-reliance then. There's an external anchor there.
It certainly complicates the picture. And that leads us to the third key turning point, which complicates it even further. Lily.
The forbidden love interest. Another patient.
Yes, a very fragile young woman, a former prostitute, also battling addiction. They form this secret, intense bond.
How was that transformative for him, according to the narrative?
It seems to shift his entire motivation. Before Lily, his focus is depicted as quite internal, almost selfish, just surviving. But with her, it becomes about something bigger, about devotion, about protecting someone else, maybe even building a future.
So it moves from sheer will to survive to needing a reason to survive.
Exactly. She provides this vital emotional anchor. It suggests that even for someone championing radical self-reliance, love and connection are maybe the things that truly fuel the fight. It adds this layer of vulnerability.
And her story ends tragically in the book.
Yes, her suicide is devastating. And that becomes the ultimate test of his newfound sobriety and resolve. He has to navigate this immense grief without relapsing. Surviving that loss solidifies his transformation within the story.
Human lessons and reflection.
Okay, so we have this powerful narrative of hitting rock bottom, finding an internal philosophy of endurance, and navigating these intense relationships. For years, it was just seen as this incredibly inspiring, if brutal, story.
It connected with millions who felt alienated or were battling their own demons. That sense of defiance resonated.
But then the ground shifted. January 2006, the smoking gun investigation.
Yeah, that was the earthquake. The expose titled A Million Little Lies. It wasn't just minor discrepancies they found.
They went point by point, didn't they? That 87-day jail sentence he described so vividly.
Turned out to be just a few hours in a holding cell, a huge difference in experience.
And the train accident involving Lily, and aspects of Leonard's backstory.
Heavily embellished, or in some key aspects, outright invented. And that was the real blow, I think.
Why those specifically?
Because Leonard and Lily were the emotional core of the latter half of the book. They were the relationships that showed his transformation, his capacity for love and loyalty. Finding out they weren't real, or not real in the way depicted, felt like a betrayal of the emotional journey the reader had taken with him.
It undermined the whole emotional truth people felt they'd found in the book.
Precisely. It became less about factual errors and more about a breach of trust.
And then Oprah got involved. That really took it to another level.
Oh, absolutely. She had championed the book, put it in her book club, then she brought Frey back on her show, not for praise, but for a public reckoning.
She felt duped, she said. It was incredibly dramatic television.
It really was, and it cemented the book's place in cultural history as the example of the memoir controversy. It forced this huge public conversation about truth, fiction, and that blurry line in between.
What does this teach us looking back? What are the human lessons here?
Well, one lesson is clearly about the power of narrative. Frey crafted an incredibly compelling story that tapped into deep human needs for redemption, for connection, for seeing strength in brokenness.
But also the danger when that narrative relies on falsehoods presented as fact.
Right. It highlights our desire for authentic stories, but also how vulnerable we can be to narratives that feel true, even if they aren't factually accurate. And it shows the profound impact of broken trust, especially when it involves something as personal as a memoir.
It also perhaps speaks to the complexities of recovery itself. Maybe the true story is always messier, less linear than even a gritty book portrays.
That's a really interesting point. Maybe the need to create a heroic narrative, even internally, is part of how some people cope, though that certainly doesn't excuse fabricating details for public consumption.
Three final takeaways.
This whole saga leaves us with so much to think about. As we wrap up, let's crystallize three key takeaways from Frey's story and the controversy. What's the first one?
Okay, let's start with an emotional insight. Despite the book's intense focus on self-reliance, perhaps the deeper emotional truth lies in the power of connection. Even in Frey's narrative, it's relationships with his parents, with Leonard, with Lily, that provide the crucial anchors. It suggests that healing, especially from deep wounds, often starts when we allow ourselves to connect with others, even in our brokenness.
That makes sense. What about an intellectual takeaway?
I think the core intellectual insight has to be about the contract between the author and the reader, particularly in nonfiction. When a work is presented as memoir, there's an implicit promise of truthfulness. Frey's case blew this wide open. The scandal forced a major reevaluation of ethics in storytelling, fact-checking and publishing, and the very definition of truth in personal narrative. It's a landmark case study in media ethics.
Right, the fallout really did change things. And finally, a universal lesson.
A universal insight could be this. Recovery, whether from addiction, loss, or any major life failure, is fundamentally an internal battle. The decision to fight, the will to endure, has to come from within. However, that internal resolve is almost always fueled and sustained by external forces, by love, by loyalty, by connection, by having something or someone to fight for. Self-reliance is vital, but it rarely exists in a vacuum.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.